to say a torso. You know what? A torso. A fucking a torso.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of The Bottlemen, the only podcast about Canada, as far as I'm aware. I've been thinking we should change our name to Canada Land, because that'll be more obvious what we're about, as opposed to an oblique Trailer Park Boys reference. What do you think?
I think we should change our name to The Good Canada Land, or Canada Land 2.
That's right.
I love to be like a capital J journalist, and I love to have a guy who worked for Israeli intelligence on, because I think I'm going to give him a gotcha yeah. at the end about his involvement doing PR for the Burmese junta.
No, it's
I love to fucking platform him for 20 minutes while he steamrolls me on literally every point. Because I'm a fucking genius.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because it's cool. It's like a podcasting version of those, those Vice things where it's like, we sent someone to somewhere really cool and dangerous. And it's like, yeah, awesome. This is great. I hope that guy...
Yeah, Claudio from Crystal Castles is going to take on Henry Kissinger on foreign policy boo-boos.
No, but...
great job.
In all seriousness, this is in fact, the Bottlemen, a.k.a. Canada Land 2, a.k.a. The real anti-disinformation project of the McDonald Laurier Institute. We're disseminating the real disinformation to you from our various homes in London and Montreal. And today with us to discuss a piece of development in corporate Canada that is going to finally fix our problem of having three major telecom providers. It is Paris Marx, host of the Tech Won't Save Us podcast. Paris, how's it going?
I'm well, and I'm happy to join you, especially here on Canada Land 2, where we can discuss libertarian media policy and why we need more competition and less government regulation in the media.
Mm. Absolutely.
That's right. Let's get rid of these shackles. Yeah.
We definitely can't have public funding of media. Yeah. That's really bad.
Yeah. If I was to say the most progressive possible position that you can take on the sort of Canadian media economy, I would say it's that three is the wrong number of oligopolistic companies to have. You need a different number than that.
You need four.
You need an even number.
Yeah. that's the scary communists want a fourth media company.
That's the magic number. And not just the scary communists. The scary conservatives also want a fourth uh-huh. media conglomerate. Or at least they did when they wanted Verizon to come in and dominate the Canadian telecom market. So.
Well, I mean, that's how you know an idea is really quite revolutionary, when it captures the hearts and spirits of Aaron O'Toole and Jagmeet Singh.
I would like to take this opportunity to announce my own telecom company that I am launching that is funded entirely by the Lithuanian Department of Defense.
I love it. I can't wait to subscribe.
You get a little NATO flag with your... with your router, and then if you dip the flag in hot water, it's actually a hypercolor NATO flag, and then it's the Azov Battalion.
Exactly.
But before we get into all of this, Paris, you recently committed an act of lèse majeste against Bill Gates. Are you sorry?
I am not sorry. Bill Gates, you know, he should be able to take some criticism, given that he's not only like one of the richest people in the world, but just gets this kind of like fawning treatment by all of the media around the world. Like, he comes out and says that, you know, divesting from oil companies and stopping oil production is not the solution to climate change. And they're like, yes, mm-hmm. Bill Gates, please tell me more. Mm-hmm.
And then if you say Bill Gates is trying to, I don't know, something like, prop up the fossil fuel industry, Twitter, of course, bans you.
Yeah.
For spreading conspiracies.
And also, you know, if you tell them the legitimate fact that Bill Gates intervened to ensure that the AstraZeneca vaccine would be the AstraZeneca vaccine and not the vaccine that has been open sourced by Oxford University where it was developed, they definitely do not want you to talk about that either.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a conspiracy theory, because a bunch of right-wing wingnuts think that Well, you think correctly so, that Bill Gates is trying to control us with microchips in order to, I don't know, make the boobs smaller in video games or whatever. And so any legitimate criticism, of course, is the same thing, because I think a lot of technocratic liberals, and that includes the tech company Silicon Valley ideology, are dogs. They can only hear tone. They cannot perceive content.
The AstraZeneca vaccine has a microchip in it that basically has an AI that can identify Pepe Le Pew shapes, and then it just kind of immediately edits them out of your visual cortex.
Yeah,
you see, the Europeans are ahead of us all, because they've discovered that the microchips are causing blood clots. So they can see that this is actually happening, and so they all have to ban it because they don't want Bill Gates' microchip.
They're too big.
Yeah,
exactly. He put the wrong size microchip.
Yeah, you got to get a smaller microchip.
Exactly. And that's the subject of today's podcast, is what microchip is. We're fine with being microchipped by vaccines. We just don't want them to cause blood clots.
You see, I saw this map earlier today of all of the new microprocessor facilities that are being built in China. And I think that is where Bill Gates is getting his microchips. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely right. But I have some more exciting news from back home in Canada, which is, remember what I said earlier about us having the exact wrong number of oligopolistic media companies? Well, exciting news, because finally that number is going to change by one. The only problem is it's looking like it's going to change by one in the wrong direction, and we're going to have two.
No, we're still going to have three.
No, we're still going to have three. Sorry.
Yeah. Excuse me. Shaw is not considered one of the big ones.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's Shaw is sort of more localized to Western Canada. Rather, we are going to still have three, but the third one is going to be more oligopolistic, and that is going to significantly change things. It's going to make things incrementally worse. What do you think? What's the upshot here?
I don't think there's any upshot. Like, there's a big upshot for the companies, obviously, because they take out a Western competitor, I guess. And it helps Rogers to kind of cement up its hold on, you know, Western Canada, the telecom market out there. But, you know, there's no way in hell that this serves the Canadian public at all. You're just going to see a competitor taken out. So your rates are going to go up again, because, you know, we're all used to that story. The rates are always going up. And obviously, they are promising that this is actually going to be good news, because it's going to expand the 5G rollout in Canada. And it's also going to allow Rogers to expand its rural and remote internet, because it's so bad. And now they're actually going to care and build it out. But we know that is actually not true. And they'll just keep steamrolling and not connecting remote and rural regions of Canada, because that is not actually profitable in the long term.
Are you suggesting that these places we just sort of plonk people where there hasn't been a city grow up around them in order to extract all of the resources are not places that are served by Canada's public services? Come on. That's a little bit far-fetched.
Come on now. Telecommunications is not a public service. That should be owned and controlled by a private monopoly that can extract as much profit as it wants from all of us.
Clearly.
Here's the thing. Paris, you talk a big game, but I've done a little bit of research that actually suggests that the combination of Rogers and Shaw builds on the strong legacy of two family-founded Canadian companies. So do you have any words of apology for Rogers and Shaw for suggesting that they are large, faceless entities that just exist to, suck the productivity out of people?
You know, that's a great point. I really feel bad about saying things about these important Canadian families who have just made a ton of money by sucking money out of all of our pockets for years and years and years.
And that's the funny thing. If you're listening to this podcast while not on your Wi-Fi, you know, you are essentially supporting these two very important Canadian families, without whom we wouldn't get to pay three times as much for telecommunication service as the global average thereabouts.
Don't worry. If you're on your Wi-Fi, they're getting you too, because they provide your home internet as well.
Fantastic. I feel so spoiled living in Britain, where it's most people have either 50, 60 gig plans, unlimited. I have an unlimited data plan. I pay £19 a month.
I have an American cell phone, because it's because it's cheaper for me to have an American cell phone with like worldwide data coverage than it is to have a Canadian phone.
Don't tell the people at the major telecom companies, but I still have a Quebec cell phone plan because the rates in Newfoundland are way too expensive.
So the combined entity of Rogers and Shaw, so says Rogers, as I believe them, will have the scale, assets, and capabilities needed to deliver unprecedented wireline and wireless broadband and network investments, innovation and growth in new telecommunication services, and greater choice for Canadian consumers and businesses. Now, most of these companies have been, you know, again, enormous, if not monopolies and oligopolies for a long time, and are some of the most profitable telecoms companies, you know, in the world, just in terms of how much they can charge. Do you think anyone in Canada actually believes this, that they're going to use this to do anything other than just jack up our rates again?
No, I don't see how you can think that, especially like, I think when it comes to like some industries, like a lot of Canadians will be like, you know, I don't really know, like maybe that's a point, like maybe they could fall for it. But I think everyone is so tuned in to how shitty our telecom companies are and how much we're overcharged that people see this and they're like, why would they allow that? Like, why would we even believe that this would have anything positive for anybody in this country? Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, it's so obviously going to result in higher rates, you know, especially for people in Western Canada, where Shaw mainly operates. And by taking out that additional competitor, you know, going to the three majors, and really it's kind of going to be two, because when you look at how this kind of works out, Rogers is kind of a national telecom company in the sense that it offers services across the country, but Bell is mainly an Eastern Canada telecom company, whereas TELUS kind of covers more of the Western half. And they obviously offer their mobility services across the country, but that's kind of how it works out for like internet and cable and stuff like that, right? So you don't even really have your three majors then. You're taking out Shaw, and then you kind of have like Rogers and TELUS.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, like we talk about how sort of it's widely known, like, everybody knows this. Everybody knows that there is a problem, that the industry is further consolidating, that that consolidation is going to lead to higher prices, and that basically, like, at every point in the last, like, I don't know, for as long as I've lived, there has been, like, every sort of federal election, there has been a promise to reduce, that the government is going to, like, take action to reduce mobility, the costs of, like, just existing on a phone or online in Canada, which is, like, increasingly necessary to do. And, I mean, every single one, every single time, from every single party has failed miserably. It's either was never tried, or they sort of half-assed it and it didn't work, right?
Yeah, it never works, because they promised a few years ago, they promised that there would be these skinny basic bundles for cable that would bring down the prices for consumers. And it was bullshit. It never made a difference. And they also promised that there would be data only plans that would make it cheaper if you didn't want the other services. And again, like, it was completely bullshit. It didn't make a difference. And so now you have the Liberals and the NDP saying that what we need is kind of a cap on the price of mobility plans. And so that will make things cheaper for consumers. There's no actual action toward this kind of cap at all yet, even though it was promised in the 2015 election, I believe. But in the same way that they get around every other regulation, in the same way they got around skinny basic, in the same way they got around data only plans, like, we already know that they're going to get around this. So, like, I don't know how we can seriously believe that, how anyone is going to believe that this is going to make a difference.
How do they have this much power?
Yeah, so that's a bit of a long
story. It's a dumb question, but I mean,
yeah, well, we got time.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is, like, I've read about the history of it because it's a topic that I'm super interested in. And so, like, if you go back to the 1800s, obviously Bell is the Bell system. It's the Bell telephone system that was rolled out across the US and Canada, and that was how we were all connected to telephones. It's the reason that the United States and Canada are the only countries in the world that share like a long distance calling code, one, right? That you put in front of the number. That's because we were integrated into the same telephone system. And so in the late 1800s, you kind of had Bell controlling Ontario and Quebec. You had like a mix of private companies in the maritime provinces, because at the time Newfoundland and Labrador was its own country. BCtel, which was a private company, kind of controlled it in BC, and Bell kind of had control of what happened in the prairies as well. But when the patents start to expire in the late 1800s, then there are calls to nationalize and to take in the public ownership the Bell system, because people can see that the prices are too high and they can see that the service, especially in rural areas, is not good. And obviously at the time, the rural population in Canada was much larger than it was today. So around between 1906 and 1909, you have Alberta, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan. I know I got the orders wrong there, but those three provinces.
Failing grade four geography.
I know. I'm so sorry. They took these pieces of the Bell system that were in their own provinces into public ownership. So they created provincial telecom companies in those three provinces. And what they found...
So you've got like SaskTel and...
Exactly. SaskTel, Manitoba Telecom Services. Yeah.
I remember BCtel existing in British Columbia when I was a kid. And then it was... Yeah, I actually have no idea what happened.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what happened to it. BCtel was a private company. But so these three provinces take the Bell system into public ownership. In Manitoba, which is the story that I've read more about, what happens is the provincial government invests in building out the system. Shocking, what you would want to do, right? So then these farmers and people in rural areas have much better connection to the telephone network. And what Dwayne Winsek, who's an academic at the University of Ottawa, wrote was that in Manitoba, people in rural areas were making more telephone calls than people in the big cities of the United States, Germany, Australia, and the UK, because the rates were so low and they had such good telephone connections compared to a lot of other places because it was publicly owned and they built it out, right? And so, you know, you fast forward a number of decades. And obviously, we're in this privatization wave by the 80s and the 90s. And so Alberta is the first one to privatize its provincial telecom system. And you would know it today as TELUS. And TELUS merges with BCtel. So they control the kind of Western market. They also take Edmonton Telephones, which is another publicly owned company. And then in the sometime in the early 2000s or like early 2010s or something, Manitoba privatizes its public telecom company, MTS, and that goes back into the ownership of Bell. So over 100 years, you have Manitoba taking it into public ownership and then selling it back to Bell. And now Saskatchewan is the only one that still has its public telecom company, SaskTel, and the Saskatchewan Party, which is kind of like the conservative party for Saskatchewan, has tried to privatize it a few times, but people get super angry whenever they try to do it, because they know that if it gets privatized, they've already seen what happened in Alberta and Manitoba, that the rates are going to skyrocket a few years later. Because like this Rogers and Shaw deal, they say that with Freedom Mobile, which is the mobile carrier that Shaw owns that operates in the major cities in BC, Alberta, and Ontario, that if it gets privatized, they'll promise that the rates will stay the same for like 2 or 3 years. But then after that, they go up to the same as everywhere else. So you just pay the same amount. So people know that they're going to get screwed.
That's what the Shaw-Rogers merger has also promised, which is that, oh, don't worry, your rates aren't going to rise immediately.
Exactly.
but essentially, what it seems like you're saying is we had this sort of, we basically like did the worst parts of perestroika to ourselves. In the 1970s, we were just like, yeah, we have these fantastic, like fully built out functional state enterprises, but we're going to run the province like a business. And as we all know, running a business means you give away all of your most productive and important assets for less than they're worth to any huckster who will take them from you, effectively.
This is basically the same across almost every publicly owned Canadian sector, right? Like, I remember growing up in Cowichan Lake and BCFP, like BC Forest Products, getting privatized in the late 90s or mid 90s, early to mid 90s. And the successive waves of ownership that came in afterwards just absolutely decimating the industry on the island. And like, and you know, I also BC Hydro too. selling electricity to the United States and just, yeah, Air Canada.
It seems right. Like, you know, if you sort of go back to this, and I think it's very, when you're talking about anti-monopoly, it's very easy to like lose focus on what your North Star of like left-wing politics actually is. And, you know, start to like make common cause with liberals who are demanding more competition, because like, yes, a monopoly is a worse situation, right? It genuinely, it is a worse situation, or in some cases it's a worse situation, not in all cases. But in looking simply at, for example, what price is charged to you, yeah, that's like, that just means that, yeah, capital has that much more power. But equally, or like that slice of capital anyway. See, it's already complicated. But equally, you can find yourself like making common cause with liberals who just say, yes, we need more competition. And then saying, okay, well, what? So wait, we want these companies like more intensively like lowering their the salaries that they're able to pay, streamlining the services that they're able to provide to compete with one another. How are they going to define competition? And so like, well, I can understand the temptation to be like, monopoly is bad and monopoly is political and anti-monopolism is politically popular, because it's like sort of common sense that it is common sense among, I think, sort of like liberals or people who don't think about this too much, that like, it's better if that one company can charge you £1 million a month, or $1 million a month rather, for your data plan. Yeah, I guess that would be bad. But equally right, like we sort of so often sink into that trap of then, you know, like having the NDP being like, yes, we endorse more competition. The market must be allowed to work.
If only there were a third way.
Yeah, especially when you think about telecom, like it makes no real sense, right? Because when you think like you need to build out all of this infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So why would you build out that infrastructure 3 or 4 times? And so then like we're paying for the cost of all that in our internet rates and our cell phone bills. Like it's completely pointless. Like if you want competition, okay, like I don't agree, but at least make the network a public utility. Like nationalize the network. You have one really good network because you don't need like 4 different networks. And then you create a structure where all of these companies can use the same network and like provide competition that way. But that's not what they propose. They're like, let's get another company to build a whole new network so they can compete.
Yeah. And it's like we have the network that we already sort of built in many cases, where most of it with public money for public benefit. And now we're saying, what? Okay, now we have that one. Let's go ahead and build like 3 or 4 more. What if we serve rural communities by giving them all jobs as the people climbing up the giant cell phone towers to service them, and then they can all also be YouTube influencers?
No, like the thing that doesn't make sense there too, like, yeah, a lot of these networks were built out with public money, or, you know, the older parts of the network, like when there was a proper like monopoly, regulated monopoly of the Bell system, right? A lot of the newer stuff has been built out when they kind of had their oligopoly situation that was less regulated. But when we think about like rural and remote internet, a lot of that is subsidized with public dollars from the federal and provincial governments. And time and time again, they tell us that, you know, there's going to be new subsidies, and this time the rural communities are finally going to have good internet. And it never actually works, because, you know, they just keep subsidizing these companies and they never properly build out the infrastructure that these communities need, because it just makes no sense to rely on private companies to do this when you could just make a crown corporation and do it. Like,
yeah. Didn't Finland, like back in 2010, 2011, declare internet a basic human right? And then they used public funds to sort of connect the communities north of Helsinki. Like, yeah, I mean, it seems like there are existing models of a way to make this work, even without just making all telecoms publicly owned, right? Like,
absolutely. Like, I don't know the specific situation in Finland, but the Canadian government already considers internet to be like a human right or whatever. That's what the Liberal government says. But they don't actually like implement the policies that would make that a reality, because they're so focused on relying on the private oligopoly, the private telecom oligopoly, to carry out this policy instead of just building the networks and connecting these communities. Like, it would be so much quicker and more efficient to do that, but they don't want to get involved and they don't want to have the government actually do anything. They want to rely on private companies.
Now, I've promised that I would never be distracted by a set of jingling keys again, but in the merger announcement, they did say that these companies are going to include a $1 billion rural connectivity fund, which I'm certain is enough to tackle the problem forever and also won't just, again, be like a marketing toss-off that's just, you know, essentially used to... But that the much of this $1 billion rural connectivity fund isn't just used kind of like the sponsorship money, sort of making billboards around Ottawa saying, Rogers is doing a great job connecting rural communities in Manitoba. Don't ask them. They're liars. You can ask them. You can't email them. I don't know why.
Yeah. Like when they announced this deal, that was the first thing that stood out to me because I said, like, if this goes through, that is the line that they're going to use to sell it. Is that they're finally going to connect rural and remote communities this time. Like I said, like it's all an illusion. It's not actually going to happen because it's not profitable for them to do so. But this is like the way that they'll try to sell it to the government and the CRTC if they're going to be gullible enough to fall for it again.
Yeah, because it's like we could, they could always have done this. There's nothing that's enabling them about this merger to do this. They could always have done it. They're just saying, oh, well, if you let us extract monopoly rents in like, you know, 3 years time or whatever, we'll do this thing that we always could have done, but have not elected to. Again, you would have to have terminal Charlie Brown brain to fall for that. And we know that everyone in Canadian politics does. And so they will.
Absolutely.
The other big sort of marketing thing they're using is 5G, that we're going to make 5G a reality, that 5G is about nation building. It's vital to boosting productivity, that we're not going to have self-driving cars in Iqaluit without it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. and again, like it seems as though they're really sort of talking about all the bells and whistles and absolutely not providing any of the core services that people actually need. But 5G, what I find really interesting about this 5G thing is in the US and UK, 5G is always used by China hawks to talk about China. If we don't do 5G, China's going to do 5G. Not to mention we're using all of China's technology to make 5G because we don't know how to make anything here anymore. But nevertheless, whereas I haven't seen a lot of the sort of China hawk rhetoric around the about this merger's importance for 5G rollout, which I found very odd. I was really expecting to see more of it.
It's got to be the same reason you don't see China hawk rhetoric around the fact that, you know, Sinopec is heavily invested in the Alberta tar sands, right? Like, it's just not convenient to the narrative.
Yeah, Canada hasn't kind of gone all in this kind of like anti-China rhetoric in the same way that the US and the UK has. And I think you can really just like see that that's for economic reasons, right? Canada still wants to sell a lot of stuff to China, especially because we produce so many resources. So we want China to keep buying. So we haven't kind of engaged in this in the same way that we've seen in the US. I don't know if Canada is still kind of hoping that it passes, sort of. Like, obviously, you know, there are people in the media who are driving this kind of thing, but you don't see it to the same degree from the Canadian government as you would from like Boris Johnson or Joe Biden or Donald Trump or something, right? It is interesting, you know.
I think the way you see it in Canadian politics isn't based around this sort of like, you know, this like 5G scare shit in America. Or even like containment policy rhetoric that you get in America. It's a lot of the anti-China sentiment and media in Canada is coming out of right-wing think tanks who are staffed by psychotic anti-communists like Marcus Kolga. Mm-hmm. You know, it's shit like, it's stuff like McDonald Laurier Institute white papers, you know? This is a think tank whose board of directors also write for Epoch Times. So when that stuff leaks into the Canadian media sphere, it's definitely coming from, people like Marcus Kolga, who are ideologically committed to whitewashing Baltic Nazis, for instance. And, you know, at the core of their being, they are anti-communists. So that's, you know, that's their motivation for dumping this sewage into the stew of Canadian media. It's not quite as focused as the United States. process, I think.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, even like in Canada, as far as I'm aware, we haven't even officially like banned Huawei from 5G and telecom infrastructure in the way that the US and the UK have. Like we've really kind of stepped back on those sorts of things. That's not to say that like the Canadian government, like the Liberals, are not like total hawks and we shouldn't trust them, and like they're not, you know, pro China or anything like that. But they have moderated to a greater degree, I think, than the US and the UK. And, you know, it's interesting though, because I think our relationship with China is still damaged because of the, because we arrested that Huawei executive, I can't remember her name right now, and are still kind of holding her here. And so that's still a big issue. And the media loves to bring up these two Michaels in China. Like, you know, that's the whole focus of China policy these days for the media, is just these two guys in China.
Yeah, one of whom who was just simply arranging tours of the DPRK. I mean, it's just totally normal shit, right?
Yeah, it's a totally
free my man Michael.
It's another one of these things where it's just, damn, the Vice approach to foreign policy does seem like it's leaked everywhere. So pulling us back onto our extremely expensive phone call that we're on. We've looked at a little bit of that, right? One of the popular solutions to all of this has been MVNOs, which are essentially the idea that we're going to do something the UK has done, by the way, right? Which is you force the big telecom companies to keep some spectrum of their signal open for lease at a discount by small providers, thereby allowing a company to start up, essentially lease a bunch of airspace. Again, I don't know how you really lease airspace. This seems like it's imposing scarcity on something that doesn't really have a lot of scarcity to be imposed upon it. It's very difficult. Nevertheless,
there's only a limited amount of air.
That's right. Riley. Well, I mean, I understand how like you have a certain amount of signal. You have a certain amount of that you can use in your spectrum of usable signal. That makes sense to me. But the idea that you can but then how come like the company that is controlling the towers gets to lease out certain bits of the SIG? It seems like they've just sort of started arbitrarily at like, well, it's good that all of this is privately owned. Let's sort of solve it with more and intricate patterns and beautiful mandalas of private ownership that are going to just fix this problem in perfect balance. And what I think is very funny, right, is this absolute weak, watered down, diluted solution to the problem of telecom pricing in Canada, these MVNOs, is basically written about by, and I've did some research into this, into like the lobbying organizations for Canadian telecom industry. And the main one is the Canadian Wireless Telecommunications Association. And most of the articles are written by a man named Robert Jizz, which is very funny to me. Bob Jizz basically writes about, again, this completely just white bread, just nothing solution. Like he's got a flashlight under his chin. It's like, you say, MVNOs would have significant negative impacts in Canada's economy. Apparently, Canada's gross domestic product would be reduced by an estimated $10 billion within 5 years if Canada's facilities-based wireless carriers were required to grant mobile virtual network operators access to their networks. Oh no, the GDP.
Oh no.
It's the wrong...
Jizz explodes on MVNOs.
That's right. where has Jizz landed on this issue is my question to you.
How much coverage does Jizz have on this MVNO issue?
He says that if you reduce like the oligopoly like a tiny bit just by forcing them to like dole out some other options in their way of people leasing their wavelength, would lose also a further $2.5 billion in tax revenue and almost 100,000 jobs. I'm sorry,
it's so
everybody.
Ridiculous.
the population of St. Catharines, Ontario, is now completely out of work, according to Robert Jizz, because in case we reduce TELUS's profits by like, I don't know, 0.5%.
It's so wild. Like, obviously, you know that the stats are like complete bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. Even I was talking to some people during the pandemic who work for the telecom companies as well. And so, like, I don't know if people who are listening are aware, they probably are. But like, when you think about mobility services in Canada, like you think about Bell, TELUS, and Rogers, but then there's also Virgin Mobile, Koodo, Chatter, Fido. But those cheaper brands, the Virgin Mobile, Koodo, Chatter, Fido, are all owned by the oligopoly as well, right? Mm. They're not separate companies. So they're just brands that they make to make it appear as though there's competition and that you can go somewhere else if you're mad at the main carrier, right? Mm. But what they were telling me was that during the pandemic, they started to work in the same stores. So the people from Koodo would also work in the TELUS stores, and they would all offer the same store, the same services at the same location. And so, like, I don't know how that has panned out, if that has changed since, but it did make me wonder, like, at what point do they just say, like, keeping up two separate brands for no different purpose and having all of this like separate real estate, like, at what point does it not really, is there no point to it anymore? And they just combine it all together and then like lay people off. And your TELUS person will sell you TELUS and also sell you Koodo. Like, I can see them doing that.
This is exactly, Riley, what you were talking about. This is the perestroika approach to like jingling keys capitalism. You can go into the music store and you can buy the Krasny amp or you can buy the Mir amplifier, and they're both identical except for the name. They're both made at the Krasnoyarsk munitions factory in Omsk.
Yeah, but you know? At least in those cases, you get an amp. This is just monopolizing signal range. You don't even get an amp, Dan.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Perestroika version of capitalism is shitty, but it doesn't produce anything. Yeah,
exactly.
I think, though, like when you're talking about MVNOs as well, like that has become one of the main pieces of the policy discussion in recent years, right? The government is not talking about it yet because it says that we should try these price caps that it won't even implement first. But you know, kind of the argument by the competition people is that this is the way that we solve the problem with Canadian mobility pricing, right? That we legalize these MVNOs, we force the oligopoly to start selling access to its networks to these other companies that want to offer mobility services, and then the prices will go down. And I would argue that, yes, like that will happen if we legalize that, but also if we regulate the rates at which Rogers, TELUS, and Bell need to sell access to their networks to these companies. Because one way they could get around it is they say, okay, you need to sell access to these other companies. And they say, yeah, okay, but we're just going to charge a fortune for it, right?
Also, what's to stop them from just, you know, buying them?
Totally. And they've done that like multiple times. Like there was, what was it, Public Mobile or something like that? And there was Mobilicity. And they've bought these companies up. And like even MTS, which was their competitor in Manitoba, is like now just part of Bell.
Yeah, it seems as though like if you just keep, the problem is that it's like they are essentially bailing water out of a leaking vessel back into the sea to have it leak back into the vessel. It seems as though we are not really fixing the actual problem here. Because again, fixing the actual problem would require Canada to be scary to its many valuable private telecom monopolies. And you know, if we do that, then no one will have any phone. You know, they'll take the towers and they'll move them to somewhere else in the world. You know, maybe they'll move them to Brazil or whatever. But they certainly won't stay
sending,
here.
We'll be sending telegrams to each other to try and tweet. You know?
Yeah, I don't want to live. It looks like we just have to keep these three families in charge of all of the country's communications because otherwise we won't have anything.
And we definitely can't make them mad because then they'll just take it away, you know?
Yeah. Some more coverage by Bobby Jizz. I really was looking forward to talking about him. He says facilities-based competition and all these, basically these are just like PR pieces by this like industry advocacy association that's funded by all of these companies. And that then like just places op-eds with like credulous newspapers.
Look, I was looking for information about telecom companies, and I clicked on Jizz POV, and I did. Not sure what this has to do with monopolization.
Yeah, and yet, it's how I feel. Canada's regulators have long recognized, he writes, that facilities-based competition is the best way to achieve the objectives of high-quality services, wide network coverage, and affordable prices, which, as we've discussed today, facilities-based competition has already given us. So what's the point of even recording the episode? And when you say facilities-based competition, I think what he means is, as we talked about, like, just having a whole bunch of redundant cell phone towers because of ideology, basically. Because we are too ideologically committed to competition to not have a bunch of redundant, unnecessary infrastructure.
Yeah, and you know, that's how they keep competitors out, right? Because a small company or any kind of company, even when they were promoting the idea that Verizon was going to come into Canada and like become the fourth national carrier, like it's ridiculous because they would have to make such a huge investment to build out the network. And all through the time that they were constructing this network, the oligopoly would be like trashing them with PR, would be reducing the rates on their services to push them out so they could just raise them again later. Like it would never work. It's not a workable policy. Like the infrastructure is the power here. It's what gives the oligopoly its power to charge Canadians so much. So if you let some other companies access that network, yes, you know, you could have some competition that would bring down rates, but you still don't affect the power of these companies to then go to the government and try to get laws passed that are still in its favor, right? Mm-hmm. That's why, like, my view is that you need to take the infrastructure away from these companies and make it a crown corporation. That if you're someone who cares about competition, that's the only way that you have, like, effective competition. But for me, I would say you don't just stop by taking the network. You also offer a public telecom service that where like the same way that you go to the post office to send a letter, you can go to like the public telecom store and like get your internet and cell phone set up.
And so like, let's just think, right? Because it's not even as though that's sort of so completely unreasonable. In fact, we did it already. We did it already before there was the infrastructure. And we built what company really would come in and actually build that infrastructure? It's so expensive and so risky. You'd need an enormous amount of capital, like the kind of capital that you have, for example, when you're part of the organization that creates the money.
Yeah, but if you live in Saskatchewan, you can still go to the public telecom store and get all your services set up because SaskTel still exists. Like, it's not this thing that is just like such a crazy idea. Like, it literally exists right now in the country, and we're just like scared in the rest of the country to challenge these monopolies and like offer something else.
No, that's, I mean, and so it's not even that, yeah, like you say, it's not even that it's unreasonable. It's just that none of our feckless losers in politics, especially the orange feckless losers, are going to do anything about it.
Yeah, if anyone, like, I guess reasonably, if anyone was going to say, like, maybe we should nationalize it, like, you wouldn't expect that from the Liberals or the NDP. Like, if anyone was going to say it, it might be the NDP, or, sorry, the Liberals or the Conservatives, if anyone was going to say it, it might be the NDP. But, like, you know that because of the leadership in that party and because of how it's changed over the course of a couple decades, like they're completely in the competition, you know, mind space like the Liberals. Like they're basically the Liberals light. They say the Liberals want to do a price cap on mobility plans. And the NDP says, you're not doing it yet. Why are you not doing it yet? Mm-hmm. Like that's not a policy that like offers anything different from what the Liberals are already saying.
And so what,
well, the NDP has their hands full, you know, they're disciplining party members who would share a stage with noted anti-Semite Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And God, I saw that. And I saw some just a bunch of like Canadian talking heads who have zero fucking idea what went on being like, but have you read the official report from the anti-racism body in the country? It's like, number one, fuck you. Shut the fuck up. You know nothing of what you're talking about.
Absolute chowderheads. And there's a direct line between that and like Canada Land just going and platforming the guy who's doing PR for the Myanmar junta. It seems to be a common disease in Canadian media.
Well, I think it's just this desire to just flatten things, right? This desire to take certain things at face value, like anti-monopoly means anti-competition, and people don't like monopolies, which means they must like competition. So we're going to ignore the actual history of how telecoms came about in this country. We're going to ignore the actual effects of what has happened when we have tried our selected policies before, which is that they haven't worked because the telecom companies have gotten around them. And instead, we're just going to think in cliches. We're just going to decide, yeah, well, we need to just hold one another to account. So the conversation between the Liberals and the NDPs is just basically like, we are going to keep on trying to get blood out of this stone, effectively. You know, and I mean, I have no idea, because like most of what I've seen here is just that this is a conversation between the Liberals and the NDPs, like calling on one another to enact or support the exact same policies. Well, what's the Tory position in all this? What, just that like TELUS should be able to build a cell phone tower in your house?
Yes.
I don't think Aaron O'Toole has like said a whole lot about this yet, like, or about telecom policy, because he's rather new to the job. Like their policy is generally like, we will bring down rates through competition as well. Like under Stephen Harper, the big push, because he had to do something, right? Because telecom rates were a big problem. So that's when you start to get the skinny basic bundles, which is this notion that like you'll get cable, but you can pick your channels, so it'll be cheaper. It wasn't cheaper because the telecom companies got to design what it looked like, so it was more expensive. So it was no big change. And that was also when we had the policy of, let's bring in Verizon as the fourth national carrier. And obviously that was not only a stupid policy, but it was one that the oligopoly very easily defeated. But it was a way for the conservatives to kind of punt it down the line and to let, you know, the telecom oligopoly just get away with doing whatever it wanted until they finally were out of power again. And then it was the Liberals' turn. And so the Liberals said, oh yeah, price caps, and we're going to bring down rates. And, you know, there's been absolutely no action on that at all, even during this pandemic where like people are clearly reliant on these services more than ever. And the Liberals the whole time have just been like, yeah, well, you know, that's it. We're not doing anything right now because we're dealing with a pandemic. And it's like, yeah, but like you can, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. You don't need
Every Liberal lawmaker and policy wonk has to be out there enforcing quarantine, putting right-wing influencers into hotels, actually physically giving the jabs themselves. They couldn't possibly regulate a crucial industry at a time when it has an unusual ability to generate windfall profits. Come on, it's unreasonable.
Well, this is the thing about the Liberals' governing style, right? Is that it's designed so that they never have to do anything, because they come to power and they say, okay, we have all these promises. And so now we're going to start doing public consultations. And those public consultations just run on for years and nothing actually ever happens. Like they brought in these new gun laws the other day. Last month or whatever. But they were consulting on these gun laws for like 4 or 5 years or something. Like it took forever. Yeah. And it made them actually look really bad, because when New Zealand had that shooting at the mosque 2 years ago, it was like within a week they had new gun laws in place and were like rounding up these guns. And everyone was like, why didn't you guys do that after the Quebec shooting? And they were like, well, we had to do public consultations. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's just complete bullshit. They just don't want to piss off the few conservative gun nuts who like get a ton of media attention every time gun laws are in the media. But I know that's kind of
I think that's a similar point though, right? Which is that the Canadian Liberals, and what they sort of do every single time is, They govern as though they have no mandate, but to kind of just keep things more or less in balance and keep the current trends going at more or less the same. It is a profoundly small C conservative method of governing, right? Where they actually are trying not to do anything. And I think that's something that's happened, especially in that's something that's not just limited to Canada. That's happened also with the Democrats in the States, with Labor over here, which is, you know, barring some exceptions, that since the 1990s, the trend has been basically that conservatism has become revolutionary, you know, effectively. You know, I mean, a revolutionary about, like, you know, my snot-nosed nephew didn't like my post about how, like, you know, Justin Trudeau actually wears whiteface all the time and the photos of him in blackface are his real face. And, you know, that's like, you know, but conservative politics is about, like, taking that madness and imposing quite big changes with that madness. And you know, the liberal politics have become fundamentally conservative. So, well, of course, they're like, the liberals wouldn't even do anything quite so mad as inviting Verizon in. They're just sort of there to keep things in balance and not really changing. And so it's of no surprise to me, right, that there have been endless consultations that they're going to try like rate capping or MVNOs or whatever for like the fourth or fifth time. And of course, it's going to fail. And that, you know, and within the next 10 years, there's just going to be one telecom company in Canada. And the merger is going to be like, you know, that it's going to be essentially in the style of a Pepperidge Farm commercial of this one family working hard generations ago to farm the signal from out of the earth and then bring it to market.
Farming the bit rate.
Yeah, exactly. Like it is totally unsurprising to me that is essentially what we're stuck in, and that as a result of its, like, you know, triangulation fetish, our party that should be opposing that isn't, because they're too busy going to plays put on by the Azov Battalion.
Yes, I feel like this is a really good example of a bipartisan issue that you know, like, I think the liberals aren't.
I'd say a tripartisan issue, really.
Tripartisan issue. Yeah. I mean, you could get a lot of people on board from either side of the political divide by saying, I think about it like this, right? Like, if you go to the Balkans and you're in a room with like a Kosovar Albanian, a Serb, and a Bosnian, and they're of a certain age, maybe they're arguing, and then you bring up a band called Azra. And they say, oh, Azra, great band. Love that band. Amazing band. Everyone loves it. Mm-hmm. So the same effect, but opposite, if you're in a room with you know, someone from St. John's, someone from British Columbia, and somebody from Calgary, and you say, how about Rogers? You know, where people fucking hate telecoms here. Mm-hmm. They loathe them. I think the only other industry that's equally hated is Canadian Airlines, like right across the board. So, yeah, the liberals could capitalize on that. Do something good.
Yeah, it is. It's an issue that unites the country in like a way that almost nothing else does. But, you know, why would they want the support of people to vote for them and actually do things that improve people's lives? That would make absolutely no sense.
Well, that wouldn't be, come on, that wouldn't be that Canadian. That would be, you know, that's what populists do. And we don't have any populist parties.
Yeah, they're sure. Very scary populists.
Canadians are not about having scary populists. We're about having telecom profulists. That's right. I've actually just been hired by the NDP as their new sloganeer. I'm the outreach consultant from the NDP for the National Post.
Media job?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working for them basically to try to get us some favorable coverage by the National Post. That's my job.
I can't wait to see your take on the next Biden Trudeau letter. You know, how you mark it up and give us those kind of different sayings and comments. Can't wait.
Well, speaking of what the NDP has said, so the Jagmeet Singh has issued the following statement on the merger. We've noted that they've said, you know, again, they've been, you know, orange sock them losers. Let's find out exactly how. Big telecom companies are gouging Canadians and continuing to make massive profits in a time when most families are struggling to get by, which is true. A merger between two of Canada's biggest providers will just make it worse, which is true. For generations, these telecom giants have had essentially no competition. All of this is true. They make huge profits and the Liberal and Conservative governments let them. This is all of this is true. Justin Trudeau's ask nicely strategy when it comes to fighting for fairness for Canadians has been a total failure. Which is true, but what are we proposing that's different? Nothing. We want to ask nicely. If we ask nicely, then they'll have a different effect.
This is the whole like NDP policy platform, I think, is like ask the Liberals to do what they promised. Mm-hmm. Like that's their whole thing. Like all throughout the pandemic, like they were saying, like, it's because of us that you have sick pay. It's because of us that you got the CERB. And it's like, no, like all that shit was proposed by the liberals and you just voted for it. And like in a couple instances, like the student CERB got a bit more money on it because the NDP was like, add $200 or we won't vote for it. And the liberals were like, yeah, whatever, sure. If it, like, it's all liberal policy. And the NDP are like, look, we are championing you guys because we are getting the liberals to pass their own policy. And it's like, yeah, thanks. Like, great job.
Mm-hmm. And it's the total lack of vision that I think what's the problem is, and I think we've talked about this even on the first episode of this show, is that as the NDP and liberals have basically no vision, they're leaving a huge gap in the market for Aaron O'Toole, the human Jeb Bush, to essentially provide that vision because no one else is. So you know, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, when the conservatives finally get their sort of, you know, policies on these things together, to have them issue a statement on the next telecom merger that's like, we are going to ensure that conservative posts get liked. We're going to stop throttling your YouTube videos that you make in your car.
You will not be shadow banned. Yeah,
and that's going to be the big vision, which is that we're going to end shadow panning. We're going to make it so that Lauren Southern gets Cassandra Fairbanks gets everyone's phone number.
Yeah, Lauren Southern has moved to Australia. So, you know, we can't have her yet. She's gone.
If you made like a video of yourself cooking a steak and potatoes on your engine block in Lethbridge, the conservative government is going to guarantee you get at least 10,000 likes.
And we're going to aggressively take control of bandwidth, of signal range from Bell, so that your video of cooking on your engine and then talking about which vaccines give you what kinds of diseases, we're going to make sure that gets viewed by everyone. There's going to be an MVNO specifically for conservative cranks.
It's like the opposite of net neutrality. Like, you need to give dedicated space to conservative voices on your network.
Yeah, and that's great. So, you know, thank you to the NDP and liberals for leaving, I think, this as the major gap in the vision market for what to do about Canadian telecoms. Awesome. I can't wait for you guys to, like, yeah, I don't know, just credulously accept this $1 billion rural connectivity fund that, again, is probably going to do nothing. Legislate that they have to let in a competitor on their network that they're going to buy within 2 years. And then, you know, ask them nicely to not raise their prices, which, again, they will after 3 years. So great. Thank you for the change. Canadians are definitely going to stop hating their telecom providers because you're going to do nothing.
Yeah. You know, I think if you look at like what's actually going to happen, like, obviously don't think this is a prediction, it might be wrong, but the people who promote competition policy are like, this is the opportunity for the government of Canada to say, like, yes, this merger can go through, but you need to allow MVNOs on your network now, and this is going to like be the big change. But I think what you're more likely to see is that they buy into this like rural fund, and maybe they have to like, I think the big thing might be they have the spin-off Freedom Mobile, which is like the mobile provider as its own company, to be like the fourth carrier. So that's not caught up in this whole deal. But then after like 3 or 5 years, they'll just buy it anyway, because that's usually what they do.
Yeah, it's a game of three card Monty. And there you go. That's it. And I don't know, again, if they're cynical or just morons, but boy, our politicians like to be taken for suckers by this, like these 2 to 3 families.
I mean, how many members of those families are there, like, roughly? Like, at least, like, 40, right? We could probably round up 40 of them, put them in a giant hamster wheel, and create the energy required to roll out a publicly owned 5G system in rural Canada.
So, that's the Bottleman proposal.
Yeah. The other key here, though, is that they're not just telecom companies, right? They're also media companies. Like, Bell owns CTV.
That's a big point.
So if you take on Bell, then CTV is going to start trashing you. Yeah, they say they have editorial independence, blah, blah, blah. They don't really. Bell can interfere and change stuff on their programs they have before. So if you try to take on the telecom companies, not only are they going to advertise really heavily against you because you're taking away their market power, but they also own the media network, so they can shape the coverage of how this is all reported on. Like right now in Canada, we have this proposal that's coming forward to kind of copy the Australian media law, where the Google and Facebook need to pay the media giants. And what you see in all the major newspapers is that it's this great idea. It's fantastic. We need to do this to save the media because they're all going to benefit from it. So that's their coverage. And it's like, if you read what the Toronto Star or the National Post are publishing on this stuff, you'd think, yeah, this is fantastic. Let's do it. But it's shit. It's terrible.
You know, I mean, you can even see that in the Globe and Mail's coverage of the of this merger was Rogers and Shaw likely to face regulatory hurdles as deal depends on upends Ottawa's focus on new wireless entrants. So basically the headline framing the entire thing as a red tape. So great, cool, awesome. I love our great country.
I think to save Canadian media, you need to identify who is in it, round them up, and put them in a Potemkin village that has a closed system internet where they can write their articles and they can read their articles and comment on each other. But it's all closed up. Yeah.
It's powered by the hamster wheel.
That sounds like China.
It's powered by the hamster wheel. Nothing gets in. Nothing gets out.
And on that note, I think it's about time for us today on the Bottleman. So with that now as our official proposal, where we'll be running candidates on the platform of essentially, I guess, what, like doing Three Stooges stuff to Canada's richest and most influential people. So with all that in mind, I want to say, number one, thank you for the listener for listening. And number two, to say thank you in advance for listening to Tech Won't Save Us with Paris.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Great podcast.
Come on over, you know, get some critical takes on tech and why Silicon Valley sucks. That's basically the podcast.
Absolutely. And also, I want to say, Paris, thank you very much for coming and hanging out with us today and talking about the how great Canada's internet is.
Thank you so much for sharing my disdain of the Canadian telecom industry.
And also, don't forget, we have a Patreon, $7 Canadian a month. You can get a second episode. This week, the bonus episode is going to consist of me and Dan talking to some of the E1 guys about different chain restaurants, which...
It's going to be E1 on mid-priced family Canadian dining. So all your favorites.
Swiss Earls,
Chalet. East Side Mario's.
I think Andrew has already referred to it as having the quote Thanksgiving delight. So I'm looking forward to seeing what these guys think about it.
There was a Swiss Chalet here, and like everyone knew it was like infested with rats, and it was like, you don't go to that Swiss Chalet. Like there might be rat droppings in your food.
Absolutely. So
That's the bad Swiss Chalet.
Every town in Canada has a bad Swiss Chalet. We all know it. Yeah. The St. Catharines one was the one by the Fairview Mall. Anyway, that's all about all the time we have for today. So once again, thank you, Paris. Don't forget to listen to Tech Won't Save Us. Don't forget to subscribe to the Bottleman Patreon for that wonderful second episode. And here's talking about the Thanksgiving delight, rolling up the rim for victory, all this stuff. So other than that, I think we will see you on the bonus. Later.